Good evening and welcome to the Okay. Let's try this again. Good evening and welcome to the regularly scheduled Planning Commission meeting for Tuesday, March 5th, 2019. We're at 209 Surf Street in Morro Bay at the Veterans Memorial Building. We have a full complement tonight, so we have a quorum, so I'll call the meeting to order. Can we please have a moment of silence to start the meeting? Okay, thank you very much. Please rise, face the flag, and we'll begin the Pledge of Allegiance. Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Do we have any Planning Commissioner announcements? Okay, Joseph?
I do. As a matter of fact, I have two quick ones.
Okay.
On March 27th at the Community Civic Center, there'll be a policy forum sponsored by the Morro Bay Open Space Alliance, which is a homegrown land conservation organization, about the Tri-W site and the issues of possible annexation or sphere of influence or not. So if you're interested in learning more about that, again, just to gather information. And then the other thing is on St. Patrick's Day, the 17th, the brewery, Three Stacks and a Rock in Northern Morro Bay, is sponsoring a fundraising event, again, for the Morro Bay Open Space Alliance. So you're all welcomed, and a substantial amount of the funds raised will go to the organization, and they even have a beer called Eagle Peak Beer. So I encourage all of you to come out and enjoy yourselves and help us. Oh, I'm sorry. And the St. Patrick's Day event starts at 2 o'clock, 12, and the policy forum on the 27th begins at 6 in the community center.
And where was the policy forum? I didn't catch that.
Here, the community center. You know.
Okay, great. Anybody else? Okay. So this is the time we usually have public comment. If anybody wishes to address the Planning Commission on items typically not on the agenda, please step forward. You'll have 3 minutes.
Good evening, Planning Commission and staff. Thank you for giving me the time to speak. My name is Kristen Hedlund. I'm a 29-year homeowner here in Morro Bay. I'm here to speak about the 10-acre jet fuel project that's taking place in North Morro Bay. I live across the street from 3300 Panorama Drive. The 10-acre parcel, zoned as R1 for residential, the site of a decommissioned jet fuel pumping station that was sold to a private party in 2012. In 2016, the neighbors and I were notified by the city regarding the proposed demolition of the two jet fuel tanks, one water tank, some shot creek surrounding the two berms that contain the jet fuel tanks. This demolition project started like in August of 2018, and it completed the demolition. Was done in December, but I don't know if it's formally closed. I just want to go on about the property. The north side of the property has a grove of 50-plus-year-old Monterey cypress trees that line a creek. This creek is designated as an environmentally sensitive habitat and is home to an endless number of birds and wildlife. I've been an active, concerned resident, along with my neighbors, about what is happening on this piece of property. From the beginning, the neighbors and I understood that this was going to be a residential development. The neighbors and I have attended all the Planning Commission meetings regarding the demolition project that was approved in June 19th of 2017. We have asked the city to follow all state laws and city codes to protect us from hazardous waste blowing in the air or being transported off the property. This project has become a problem, as the property owner does not follow city or state laws regarding the 10-acre parcel that he owns. At one point, 5 to 6 trees were illegally cut down, and it occurred during the nesting season. I filed a code enforcement violation regarding this, and I didn't know what the outcome was on that. But let me carry on. In November of 2018, the applicant wanted to remove 3 private fire hydrants on the property, along with 3 structures that contained asbestos. So the 10-day public comment period occurred. We provided public comment, and then it was we had the option to appeal the approval of this removal of the structures with asbestos and the fire hydrants. We discovered that the fire hydrants had already been removed. We filed the appeal, and then immediately the 3 structures were removed from the property. Does that mean I'm over? I'm done?
Yeah, it does.
Okay, so my last statement.
If you can just conclude.
My last statement.
Great.
We filed an appeal, and I asked that the appeal be placed on the Planning Commission agenda so that the egregious violations of the city and state law to formally be presented by the city for city Planning Commission and public input. Thank you.
Okay, great. If you have any written testimony, you can give it to the staff also if there's if you have any backup.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, do we have anybody else who would wish to speak? Okay. Seeing none, I'll close public comment. Scott, do you have any responses?
Essentially, what Ms. Hedlund indicated is true. We're going through the enforcement process right now with the owner. We've been in contact with him recently, and acknowledges that he did work without permits, indicated that it was a mistake on his part. We're working our way through that. The fire hydrant issue is an interesting one that we came across today. In that the fire hydrants had been removed as part of the original demolition work. And we're a little unclear why the applicant submitted an application as a minor modification to remove fire hydrants that had already been removed. Because they had an on-site water system that had fire hydrants on it, and they had, and the plan was to cap some of the other areas in there with that. And I guess the demolition contractor said, oh, I'm supposed to cap and slurry all of them. And so he had removed two of the other fire hydrants, I think, that were part of, subject to the application. So that happened as part of the during the original demolition project that was going on out there.
Okay, and then what happened? Do you have any information on the tree removal?
The tree removal was dealt with as part of the permitting process that the Planning Commission took on when it approved the demolition project.
And that was outside the ESHA?
It was in the ESHA where the trees were trimmed.
Okay.
Yeah, and that took place before we issued the permit on the project.
Okay.
That's part of the discussion we had related to the issuance of the CUP, CDP for the project.
Okay.
So we do have an appeal of the administrative decision for the minor mod, and we're scheduled to bring that forward in April.
So I noticed I received a couple emails on this about some blowing dust and some on-site hazardous waste storage or a container that mentioned, was signed as hazardous waste. Did you see those emails?
Yes. I don't know about the blowing dust, but there is containers on site that that hold some of the lead paint, and they haven't gotten authorization from the waste facility to transport it yet.
Okay.
When they get that, that'll be removed, and they'll be talking with us on that. Nancy's the planner on the project, and we're going through kind of all of the conditions of approval for that right now and all of the environmental requirements that go along with that. project because they're not finaled out right now, to see what is left outstanding and to provide a full punch list to them of things they need to do. We also hold a bond on the site. We have a performance agreement that's in place between the city and the applicant as well. We have some mechanisms that we're going through.
I remember we had some on-site monitoring for dust and
we did. We had an on-site industrial hygienist that we hired that monitored the project.
And how was his report on that as far as, do we have any problems with that or?
There were no readings that were outside of ordinary.
Okay.
But that said, there were some extremely windy days back in October, November, where they had to halt work because they didn't want to create any more dust. They watered the site. There are photos of dust, but it would be like photos of the beach when it's extremely windy. I mean, it picks up particles and blows it around, but it wasn't hazardous.
Okay.
And it was monitored to the extent that it could have been given the wind.
Okay. Okay, great. All right, thanks. Thanks for the update on that.
Sure.
Okay, seems we closed public comment. At this point, we have a presentation tonight. We have Erica Crawford from the Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce, and she's. So, Erica, did you?
I'm here.
Do you want us to wait till the end of the presentation for us if there's any questions?
It's really up to you. I'm happy to do this dialogue style, or I can put it all out on the table with some slides, and then we can kind of have some conversation from there. But I guess if something strikes you as, what the heck is that, just stop me and I'll stop.
Okay.
I'll try not to talk too loud, or rather fast. Not loud today. So I think, thank you very much for having me here. This was sort of born of, I think, your last commission meeting when it was sort of, you know, what does the chamber do? So I got in touch with Scott and said I'd really love to come. But at the same time, you know, bad on me for getting to this point. I should have been here earlier sort of communicating what it is that the chamber does because I do think that we are linked. So we'll start here, the sort of an outline of what we're going to talk about or what I'm going to present to you and hopefully you have questions about. You know, we're not party planners for the city, but we do love a good gathering. We do it often, and we like to promote others' gatherings. But we are a member advocate representing the business voice. We're a promoter of Morro Bay, a catalyst for economic development. This will all link into the presentation. A champion for other community efforts, and a convener of a diverse business interests within the city. You know, tourism drives our economy. We have quite a few industries in this community. And we are a training resource for both entrepreneurs and employers in the city. So this is kind of the benchmark or the touchstones as we go through. I thought I'd open sort of the arc here is what do we do? But we have to answer the question, who are we in order to get there? So and what is our role? So I wanted to introduce you to our board of directors. They are my 12 bosses. They are not ex officio seats. We don't have those. We don't have industry representatives on the board. They're elected by the membership of the chamber, 300 members, give or take. They're elected every November. They serve three-year terms. They are business community members. They do have, you know, this is a corporation that they're running as a board. It's a tax-exempt nonprofit corporation, so they have fiduciary duties. They have duties of loyalty and care. We carry D&O, you know, insurance. This is a legit thing, and we've been doing it in the city of Morro Bay since 1956, the chamber first incorporated at that time. So this is a photograph of us. Ironically, this was the day after your planning commission meeting last week. Because this, we were in the middle of a two-day retreat defining our role in the community. So you can imagine I shot ramrod straight up and thought, well, I can answer that question now. Part of what came out of our board's sort of strategic vision, because the board sets the strategic path forward that then tell me to walk, was to get more of our membership involved in the strategy. So, you know, if we have 300 members, if 10% of our membership can get involved and we only have 12 board directors, we have capacity there to build out committees. What we saw as a need, and actually it was through a membership survey where we were working our gap scores, and our gap scores were most significant in, you know, what is the role of the chamber in governmental affairs, legislative policy? And our members said that they valued that. And then the question follow-up, how's your chamber doing? Not so great. So this is sort of what was born for the Governmental Affairs Committee, and you can see in our focus areas, sorry, I'm looking awkward, I'm going to step over this way so I can look too. This is in your wheelhouse: land use regulations, infrastructure, transportation, land use planning, workforce development, and some of the people should be familiar. This is the population of our committee. Susan Stewart, one of your commissioners, sits on this committee. Rob Kitzman, Jeremiah O'Brien, Sandy Twist, Paul Van Beerden, Dan Podesto from Central Coast Lending, and it's co-chaired by Ken McMillan, who's here in the audience today for moral support, who's a downtown commercial property owner. He owns two properties in the downtown. And Stephen Peck, who's of Peck Planning and Development, decades of experience in planning with chambers, with economic vitality corporations in the Valley, and some of his work over the last 15 years brought him to our region. He's been a Morro Bay resident for some time. He's behind the Avila Ranch project. That was one of his clients that he's been working on. So this is our Governmental Affairs Committee. We do have an Ambassador Committee and an Events Committee that's kind of forming. And, of course, the Chamber staff. So I'm the only full-time staff at the Chamber. I'm the President and CEO. I've just finished 70 hours of training in Chamber industry. This is my industry. This is my profession. I don't have a side hustle. I do this full-time, all the time. That's a Cal Chamber program. I'm now on a U.S. Chamber Institute of Organizational Management path. I have professional staff who work, you know, about 32 hours a week. Catherine Gillen, who's been with me for over a year, she's a community leader with Rotary Club. Jenny Gosnell, who's been with me for over 3 years, or three-ish years. She's an advisor, so she's a Morro Bay High School graduate, brilliant graphic designer, brand manager, and she's sitting on the advisory committee for a CTE program, CTE-funded program at the high school called the J-Wing. That's a makerspace. So she's also stepping into sort of a community leadership role. And I have four very part-time visitor center associates. They're on the payroll. They help us run the visitor center. And we have members. 289 as of right now out of 715 business firms in Morro Bay. We clearly have room to grow. This represents about 1,500 employees, local employees. That's self-reported. When people join, they put in their part-time or full-time employee roster, and by industry. And I do encourage people to follow us on Instagram and Facebook, and to go to our website. But, you know, Instagram and Facebook is where we're promoting sort of what our members do, what their businesses are like, who they are, the faces of Morro Bay businesses. So this is kind of getting into the role. So we're the glue. This is the Chamber is in between our partners. The Chamber is connecting businesses to each other, peers, to resources to help them achieve success in their businesses, and to advertising programs. We have affinity programs with Slow New Times, Morro Bay Life, Estero Bay News. And I kind of wanted to elaborate on the partner piece. So partners in business education, we have an MOU with each of the three SBA-funded business education groups in the region. So Women's Business Center, the SCORE, and SBDC, the Hutt House. So they are bringing, through our contract for MB, they are bringing their resources to our community once a month in workshops. And I'll kind of show you a little bit about that a little bit later. Regional Economic Development Partners, we are working closely with Mike Manchek and his team at the Economic Vitality Corporation with the recently debuted Hourglass Project, which is another regional economic development initiative led by Melissa James. And the Morro Bay Chamber is part of the Central Coast Coalition of Chambers. We meet monthly, and that's from Solvang, you know, northern Santa Barbara County all the way up to Paso. Talk about things like, how are we sharing housing issues? What are our commuter patterns? You know, what are our cities or our counties kind of doing to move those problems forward? We're all problem solvers. That's what we're trying to do. And then in local economic development, you know, we touch pretty much every city department. We have great staff at the city. I work with Scott Graham quite often. He's presenting to our Government Affairs Committee tomorrow morning on the General Plan LCP. And we also work with some of the city hired consultants. Don Maruska, who's a local gentleman behind the LEAP program, which I think the LEAP was sort of an instrumental catalyst for MBOSA, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, so that's sort of giving birth to new organizations, which is something I've talked to you about, Commissioner Lehr, and Chapin Concepts, who produced the Economic Development Strategic Plan. They're based out of Chico, but I'm in touch with Audrey quite often. So part of that, I talked about this before, or I have. Chambers used to sort of be three P's organizations, event organizations. The P's were parties, pageants, and parades. We are moving very firmly into the arena of being a three C's organization, which is, I'll take you through the three C's and sort of some of our programs to demonstrate that we're stepping into that arena. So the first C is to be a catalyst for business growth. We are working with you guys, the city, through the Wayfinding Signage Program, through the 4MB project. We partnered with some community groups to get the downtown tree lighting project off the ground. We secured grants from TBID, and it's now sort of in city public works to get those lights up in the downtown, we're told, this month. 4MB workshops and the regional SBA organizational partnerships. We are about to launch a leadership and education talk series. Membership in the, you know, the organizations I had talked about. We do advocacy for... Thanks, Scott. We wrote a letter to Bowen, basically. We've been kind of involved on the regional side of what could development of offshore wind do to catalyze our region, and how could we partner with workforce and training with our local community college to get that kind of program going. Yeah, thanks, Scott. And I am a member of the Embarcadero Lease Management Policy Update Working Group. I see that as an economic development tool to have a policy that can be broadly enforced and, you know, it's kind of up to date. That's a very important project that I'm happy to be a part of. To be a convener of leaders and influencers, you know, we do focus groups and business walks in each of our four economic centers every month. We're back in North Morro Bay for our third round through our 4MB project on the 13th. We do hold topical focus groups. We're going to launch a community think tank, which is, well, talk a little bit more of that when it's happening. We hold mixers just for our business members. We've had 392 businesses come and engage in those mixers since fiscal year to date. And we did a squeaky wheel, which was a happy hour, an informed happy hour for the business community to come out and engage your city staff leaders in the goals and objectives process that City Council has just embarked on, so that we could properly advocate for the business needs during that process. Champion for a Strong Community is the third C. We do one event, the Avocado Margarita Festival. We love it. It's a major fundraiser for the organization, but it's also a major fundraiser for other organizations. We profit share with other beneficiaries. Our beneficiary program application is out now. We are a promotion and distribution hub for community events and programs. We have a community calendar that anybody can post on morrochamber.org. We're just starting to get that kind of going. And our visitor center is a distribution hub for programming and events throughout the city. The board recognition programs are, you know, the Citizen of the Year, Living Treasure, Business of the Year, monthly business focuses. This is all coming from the board, the chamber board. We do provide scholarships at the high school, and we are working workforce development. I would love to say that we're going to have programs initiated tomorrow. We're not. We have been unearthing and dusting off building blocks that exist in our community and in our region over the last, I'd say, 9 months since the 4MB partnership really took steam. So we've got them all out, and now we need to figure out how we're going to build with them. But we have a partnership really strong with Cuesta and with Eckerd Workforce Connects to make sure that we are kind of recognizing publicly that 66% of our Morro Bay High School graduating class is going to Cuesta for either 1 or 2 years, which means if you hire a sophomore in your business, there's a good chance you'll have that student in your business for 4 years. So it's good to invest in them. Maybe I'll zip through this part. How am I doing? Am I boring you? No. Am I doing okay? Any questions? All right. 4MB, so we'll take you through. This is sort of the contract that we're in right now. It was a pilot program through the city. This is our leave behind. These are our partners. This is what we leave with our business walks. So year to date, we visited 49 businesses. It's usually myself, city manager, and Red Davis on council. Each economic center has been covered twice, and we'll be commencing our third round next week. Susan, you've walked with us as well down in the Embarcadero area. After 1 week after we do the business walk, we have a focus group. The first round was to get feedback on branding for each of these economic centers. What is a Quintana? You know, what is that center? Is it the nuts and bolts center? What happens on that center? How does it identify with it, with what it is? But as we've gone through the second round, we've found that these focus groups are happening at advantageous times. In downtown, it was right when the tree lighting was getting going. We had two styles to choose from. It was also when cannabis permitting was kind of percolating up as a business concern in the downtown. On Quintana, we happened to be in the Quintana district during the wharf pipeline conveyance alignment discussion. So we were able to get 30 business owners from the Quintana district together with Rob Livick and Eric Casares and various elected officials to talk about business impacts in a really transparent way. The deliver of the, you know, again, the wayfinding is the deliverable from all of this effort. The SBA-funded partnerships and the trainings, these are some of the topics. You know, how to write and refresh a business plan, nailing your business pitch, digital media strategies. We had over 30 people come to the Bookkeeping for Small Business workshop last Wednesday. These are the building blocks for successful businesses. This is getting building capacity in our community. And then upcoming training, shameless plug for next week, or it's actually tomorrow, Access to Capital. This is through the Women's Business Center. They also do a Run, Start, Grow 10-week business training that's more geared for people who are just starting their businesses, not necessarily those who are looking to reinvest in their business. Finally, I'll just touch on the Visitor Center. We also run the contract for the Visitor Center for the city. I put these pictures up of the VC signage. This is the only existing signage that is in our major economic centers for the Visitor Center. There is definitely room for improvement. We have seen Visitor Center traffic on foot through the door decline by 30% year over year since 2016 to now. We need help getting people to the Visitor Center if it's going to stay in the same area. We did hold a couple of focus groups to talk to businesses in restaurant, retail, and accommodation, kind of in that gap score sense of what is the Visitor Center to you, what does it do for your business, and how is our Visitor Center doing. Overall, they said, you know, the whole city is a Visitor Center, and they had some achievable ideas to get Visitor Center staff out on the street to set up information kiosks at various businesses throughout the city that we would restock with information, and to this is a big one, to distribute quarterly notification of upcoming permits from the rec department so that businesses know what's coming in the next 3 months, either to get involved with it or just to know why that street shut down the road, you know, or to staff up for busy weekends. And that's all I got. So I'm here. Any questions, or let's have a dialogue if you want. If you just want me to go away, that's fine too.
Okay, great. Well, it's obviously you're doing more than I thought you were.
But that's my bad. You know, telling our story is something we really need to get better at. So
I apologize for
that's
that.
That's okay.
Do you have, Joseph, any questions? Or
I just think the breadth of what you're doing is really impressive. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you, Commissioner Roth. Yeah.
Thank you for what you do.
Thanks.
Susan?
You're fabulous.
I just want to thank you for all the input on the master plan, because I think that's really critical. We have different expertise up here, but the, you know, as residents, there's one kind of voice, but the business owners have a different kind of way of looking at the way the town's growing and things like
yes.
that. So it's really good feedback for us to know things like what's the capacity of the businesses versus what kind of business they're doing now. You know, is there more capacity to grow certain kinds of businesses? Because as we look at some type of residential expansion in the downtown, for instance, you know, is that offset, you know, possible commercial expansion, you know, so it's really helpful to have all the input from the different area groups mm-hmm. as well as the group as a whole.
I mean, just in terms of metrics or what we're looking at is, you know, over the past 3 years, sales tax revenue for the city has been right about $1.9 million a year, stable, you know, so we are looking at there, that needs to be invigorated, TOT also, so ways to make sure that the private sector is being made to feel as though they can invest and that those investments will reap rewards, so such as residential, you know, building in the downtown. That's great. You know, you've got people living upstairs, they're coming downstairs, they're going to yoga, they're grabbing their coffee, they're going to Shine, and they're, you know, maybe then you'll start, well, Susan, you're a downtown business owner. You know, I think it is what a thriving district makes. So, yeah, we'll make sure that business voice continues to come out and in a better way than it has in the past. So.
Yeah, I'd just like to suggest the chamber have a little more connection to the boating and also mm-hmm. the commercial fishing industries. And if any interaction or any connection there would be helpful. Also, you know, like Michael, your, you know, the business community feedback and having you as a, you know, as a go-between for the actions we take or the actions we're looking at, such as signage, mm-hmm. you know, the general plan update, you know, the community, the commercial design guidelines, you know, those items, you know, having their interaction is, I think, really important and really helpful to us because that helps us coordinate.
It's a holistic picture. You know, 54% of our business owners also live in Morro Bay. Right. So they are also residents, but that means that you're not capturing, 46% of people who are, you know, their livelihoods are dependent on being here. And the commercial fishing connection, we are absolutely supportive. And, you know, we're members of the MBCFO. Jeremiah sits on our government affairs committee. We worked in close collaboration with their leadership to coordinate our advocacy efforts with BOEM for the offshore wind. Yeah, I think it's a good, healthy relationship. One of the 10 points that we submitted to council in advance of their goals was to, you know, move forward that feasibility study for the boatyard project and to get that going for the next year. And, you know, so we are definitely in tune with what's happening on the waterfront.
And the wind power, having the connection and having the community connected to the proposed wind power farm, you know, and having our input into that too, mm-hmm. I think is extremely important.
That was basically the gist of our letter to BOEM and our advocacy position was make sure that the auction process, it, you know, has community engagement baked into it.
Yeah.
Don't allow the deepest pockets to come in and move that forward. So.
Yeah, because that's an important economic aspect for our harbor.
In many ways.
Yeah.
It could even, you know, if you, we've heard some of the operators or would-be operators in our community saying, you know, bringing people from Germany, let's say, and look at our stacks and say, we could use those as training. You know,
yeah.
We'll climb up and down those and mimic what's going on in the turbines. And I don't think there's any offshore wind research center in the States. There is one in New Mexico, I think, but that's for land-based. So how could we conceive of that and have that be a regional generator,
yeah.
too?
That's great. All right. Is there any further questions? All right. Well, thank you very
much
for your presentation.
Thanks so much for having me. Thanks for setting up.
Okay, moving on to the consent calendar. We have item A1 and item A2. So do we have anybody want to pull any of those items or discussion on them? Okay, do we have a motion?
I'll move that we accept the consent calendar.
Second?
I'll second.
Any discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Public hearings. We have item B1. This is case number S00-130, and this is the site location is 787 Main Street, Morro Bay. Do we have a staff report?
We do. Almost. Thank you. This should look familiar. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about another aspect of this. The project is to move a couple of lot lines, and in the process of getting that approved, several issues had to be resolved so that facilities, which we talked about last time, parking and trash, were on each subject property and not spilling over into the neighboring property. And today is similar to that. It's another one of those issues where the applicant has four parcels, basically that entire block on Main between Morro and Pacific. And two of the buildings, the Pizza Port building, which I couldn't find the exact date it was built, but somewhere earlier than 1920, is encroaching into the public right-of-way 2 feet. And the barbershop, which opened, I believe, in 1941, is encroaching on Morro Bay Boulevard 1 feet, 1 foot. This is the parcel map, and the red lines outlining the site are showing the requested abandonment of right-of-way, and this is to resolve the encroachment issue of those two buildings on the two different streets. So the encroachment abandonment would be 1 foot on Morro Bay Boulevard for the length of that site, and on Main Street it would be 2 feet for the length of the three parcels that are subject to the lot line adjustment. And this is the front of Pizza Port. Main Street right-of-way is 80 feet. And from, oh, there, it was there a second ago. From the edge of the curb to the inside of the sidewalk or the inside edge of the public right-of-way is 15 feet. And this is Morro Bay Boulevard, looking from the edge of the site east towards the corner. That's the barbershop. And again, the right-of-way for Morro Bay Boulevard is 80 feet. And from the edge of the curb to the inside of the sidewalk or the edge of the right-of-way, again, is 15 feet. The circulation element of the general plan states that the recommended sidewalk width in commercial areas should be no less than 10 feet. So this is more than adequate for that standard. The city engineer has reviewed this application and determined that the sidewalk width in that area is greater than needed for any proposed future improvements. And that concludes the presentation, and staff is recommending that you adopt the resolution 04-19 with findings that the right-of-way abandonment is consistent with the City of Morro Bay general plan.
Good. Do we have any ex parte communications? Okay. Questions for staff?
I did watch this on tape a while back just to make sure I wasn't elected chair. so I told people not
you were
to
gone. There was a good chance of it.
But I guess the question I have is what's wrong with it now? If someone goes to develop this parcel, obviously if they were to demolish these buildings, they would have to retreat back, right?
Once the right-of-way abandonment is approved, if it's approved, I think that becomes part of their legal parcel. And so I think the setbacks would apply to those new lines.
But I'm saying, though, if nothing was done and the situation continued as it is, I would imagine it's some kind of exception. If they were to redevelop the parcels, they would have to move those lines back.
I think
correct?
If nothing was done, but I think that, and this is my first lot line adjustment, and much of the decision is through the engineering, city engineer process, but my understanding is that they can't approve a lot line adjustment if there's an existing encroachment.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were a couple of choices to solve the encroachment. This is one. The other was to hack off a couple of feet of each of those buildings.
And I guess the other thing I was interested in is it seems like it's a small increment, but by the time you multiply that by the length of the block, do these all get reassessed then with the downtown kind of impact of hundreds of square feet added onto their parcels?
There would be a, yes. Yeah. The additional square footage would become part of that parcel, and they would be subject to property taxes.
Okay, but it gets reassessed because of the lot line adjustment, or does it wait for another cycle or something like that?
I think that's the county, so I don't know what their assessment cycle is.
Okay.
The lot line adjustment and the map that goes along with that does go to the assessor's office, so at some point they will pick it up.
Yeah. I mean, that's the only thing I can... That's one of the issues I was interested in, is that that's a considerable amount of square footage being added, which makes those parcels all more valuable. Especially if in the aggregate, and so it would make sense to me as the downtown is developing, those parcels are that square footage just keeps getting more and more expensive all the time. It would have to be reassessed. Okay. All right, thanks.
Susan, any questions? Joseph, any?
I have a question for the applicant, but
okay. Jesse, do you have any questions for staff?
No.
Okay, Nancy. Why wasn't this brought forward at, you know, at the same time the other proposal was? And so is this a stair-stepping of?
No, that would have been great. But there was some redesign of the parcel map that happened too late in the process. So I had already noticed the last Planning Commission hearing, and I couldn't add that on. So you just get to see me every 2 weeks.
Okay. What does this do for precedents for the other property owners on this side of the street, on the other side of the street? How does that go forward?
I don't think it really does anything. This is simply a requirement to comply with California government code as it relates to this same government code section that applies to this, that's in your staff report, applies to if the city's going to sell a piece of property. We want to sell a lot to somebody, we have to go through this process, and I've been before you with, yeah, with that. Mendora was one. We've already done the fire station lot. I think the Main Street lot, I came before you on that as well, next to Limos. Or if we're going to sell property or we're going to buy property, same thing. We have to come before you, and you have to make a finding that the purchase of that property is consistent with California government code. And so this is the same thing. It's relinquishment of right-of-way. It's not something the city owns in fee title. So it's basically like an easement that the city has over it, and so it's giving them back their property, basically.
Okay. So why are we, abandoning the Lot 2 and Lot 3 also? As I don't see an encroachment on those two lots.
My understanding is the city engineer thought it was better just to keep a straight line going all the way down there rather than jogging in and out around the buildings.
Okay, then what happens on the next property south of here? Do they have the same option to come forward and get that other 2 feet?
One of the delays in this hearing was that they were considering adding the fourth lot into this lot line request application. They decided not to. So I believe that by defining these three lots, that lot is defined because it's all its lines are already defined. So I don't know that that would need to go through any process, so I don't see any reason that that would benefit from a right-of-way abandonment at any point in the future.
So what about a future? How about the adjacent property beyond that, as far as coming forward and asking, hey, you know, I would like to have 2 more feet on my property too.
Well, that's the end of the block. So there would, it'd be a new block that would have to ask for. So okay. What, if the fourth parcel has no reason to ask for a right-of-way abandonment, which I mean, I don't see a reason for them to ask for one. They don't have an encroachment issue. And then that's the end of the block. So if you continue south, it's a new block.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Okay, at this point, we'll open up public comment. And would the applicant like to step forward?
Good evening, commissioners. My name's Jane Heath. I'm here representing the applicant, the Maston Bay Properties, LLC. Julie Dickinson, a member of the Maston family, is also present here tonight. Briefly, I wanted to let you know that at the time that all this came up, we consulted with the city attorney because this encroachment was discovered in the course of the surveying that was necessary for the lot line adjustment and the parcel map. And we're here tonight asking the commission to recommend adoption of the resolution, finding that the proposed right-of-way abandonment and proposed parcel map are consistent with the general plan, and to allow the parcel map to go on to the city council. The properties involved here have been in the Maston family since the early 1900s. They represent some of the oldest buildings still standing in Morro Bay. The family is seeking this new parcel map and associated lot line adjustment because the buildings predate the city of Morro Bay, and by decades, actually, so that when the lines were drawn, in some cases even after the buildings were built, the city's right-of-way ended up underneath the facade of the two buildings that predated the city and actually predated the county maps as well. That was one of the discussions that we had with the city attorney at the time that this came up, because the concern was whether the city's right-of-way, when those lines were drawn, were actually drawn properly. And what we might have to do is go back and have the surveyor come back and look again, because it was entirely possible that the city's right-of-way, was the line was actually in the wrong place. So rather than go back and do that and litigate that, which is really the only way that you could do it, is with a quiet title action or something similar, it was decided that this abandonment of the right-of-way was a cleaner and simpler way to solve the problem, because really the problem has to do with where the lines were drawn after the buildings were already built. So that being the case, we were told that's what happens sometimes when the buildings predate the streets and sidewalks. And the historic survey information is hard to come by. The map that the county surveyor used when they did the county surveyor maybe 20 years ago, is kind of funny. I mean, if you've ever looked at it, it's like lines drawn with, you know, no marks, no survey monuments, no longitudinal or latitude lines. There's, you know, I honestly question how the poor guy figured it out in the first place. And I really think that's part of the reason that we have the problem. So the property we now know as the Pizza Port was once a two-story hotel, and the applicant actually has photographs of it when it was, and they literally lopped off the top story. So it looks exactly the way it did in 1904 or 1920 or whenever it was built, except it doesn't have a top on it. So members of the Maston family respect the historic character of these properties. They want to get these issues cleared up once and for all, get nice, clean lot lines, and the city engineer and the Public Works Department have looked at this, and they feel very confident. There is no infrastructure underneath this area that's being abandoned. The sidewalks are wide enough. There's no detrimental effect at all to the city by abandoning this and cleaning up these lines. So this has been a very long and difficult process for the owners, partly because these properties are so old and the survey information is so poor. And so we're hopeful that we're nearing completion of this project. They respectfully request that the commission adopt the resolution as presented. And we'll answer questions if you have any, if it's within our ability to do so. I don't have any design professionals with me today, so we're limited in what we can do.
Okay, thank you. We'll look for other public comment, and
we'll bring
you back forward for further questions. Do we have anybody else wishing to speak to this item? Okay, seeing none, anybody have any questions for the applicant? Joseph?
I do
Could
have...
you please come forward
one question.
Again.
Yes, sir. I'm familiar when property owners want to cure a defect in title, and I would call it, it's just kind of an encumbrance as a defect in title, usually because it has something to do with marketability, because people don't want to buy properties that have any question of title. I don't see that as an issue here. So is there another reason, a commercial reason, if you will, as to why your client would like to do this? I hear that he would just like to clean up the lines that are somewhat ambiguous. But beyond that, I'm looking for a serious, substantial, material reason to do this.
Okay, so you're talking about the abandonment that you're asking about? Okay. It really has to do with how the whole thing evolved. The property owner, the parcels, they were paying the assessment as one parcel, and it was actually multiple parcels. And so not all the parcels had APN numbers, so they knew they were going to have to do a lot line adjustment. There's also the lot line adjustment because one of the, and I mentioned that in my comments, but I think we mentioned it last time we were here, the lot line adjustment on one of the parcel boundaries is because the lot line was actually drawn right, you know, was drawn under the building. I mean, there was actually, the building is over the lot line. So that had to be fixed because that was something that, you know, we not only could you not sell the property, it was just not a good idea to have a lot line under an existing building. That's something you want to fix. So that's sort of how it started. And then in the process of doing that, the encroachment was discovered, which was not understood before. The surveyor prepared the survey for purposes of doing the lot line adjustment and discovered the encroachment. So once the encroachment was there, the parcel map could not go forward. The lot line adjustment could not go forward with that encroachment. It had to be dealt with. It had to either be dealt with, as I explained, as potentially a quiet title action that would establish that, in fact, the true property line should have been in the place where the outside the building instead of under the building. Or it could have been done by an encroachment permit, which was then a tremendous expense and difficulty for the applicant to do that. We consulted the city attorney. The city attorney and the city engineer came up with this idea of instead abandoning. It was their idea. We didn't suggest it. They came up with the idea of abandoning the right-of-way because it wasn't needed by the city. The city doesn't need this piece. There's no infrastructure under it. So it's not the landowner saying, oh, I want 2 more feet of my property. It's the city saying, we got a problem. We know we have a problem. There are a couple ways we can fix it. There are some expensive ways. There are some less expensive ways. We don't have a need for this property. And it may be that it was intended originally to be the property owner's property, just where the lines were drawn, which was a somewhat arbitrary situation when it was done. I think it's about 2 decades ago, perhaps longer, when the county engineer came in and drew the lines down there. So when you're asking for a commercial reason, I mean, I don't know about a commercial reason other than they cannot accomplish either the lot line adjustment or the parcel map until the encroachment situation is dealt with. We can't go forward.
So that translate into the property cannot be sold, transferred. Until this is cured, that's a question.
Honestly, that's not driving it, though. I mean, the property owner may decide to sell the property or may not, but that's not what's driving it.
No, you misunderstand. My question is, can the property be sold without this being cured?
It has to be cured in some fashion, either by abandonment of the right-of-way or an appropriate permit or a quiet title action. It has to be dealt with.
And the appropriate permit would be, what would that be?
I think an encroachment permit of some type. I really don't know. That's really not my area. Scott could probably tell you. But that was one of the options that was suggested. And when we sat down with the city attorney and the city engineer, they felt this was a better option. So we went with that.
Okay. Jesse, you have any questions?
Not for the applicant.
Okay.
Thank you.
Susan?
Kind of a question and maybe an observation. It does sound like there is some benefit to the city if this encroachment area is added to the property owner's complete property because it does add to the tax rolls in terms of whatever new assessment will come of the property. So I guess what I'm saying is looking at Section 1 of the findings, it suggests that it actually benefits the general public to go ahead and do this because it's adding property to the tax rolls.
That may well be, honestly. Kind of out of my, it's above my pay grade, but.
Yeah, okay.
Michael? Okay. As far as including Lot 2 and Lot 3 in the abandonment, whose direction was that as far as, because you don't have encroachments on 2 or 3, and then not including Lot 4. Well, so where did that discussion come from, or where did it go?
As I understand it, the applicant only wanted to clean up the line, to correct the encroachment. The city engineer felt that a straight line across the lots was better. And the other lot is vacant, so that wasn't really an issue. And there's no encroachment on parcel 2, but it does adjoin the front of parcel 1. It, you know, it's the same continuous mm-hmm. line. So I wasn't privy to the city engineer's thoughts about that, but he felt that, you know, take, and he actually would have suggested taking it all the way to the end of the street, all the way to the corner. But the parcel 4 has its own parcel map, so it would have required, or it has its own, you know, issue, and it's already been dealt with. So it would have required us to sort of start the process over and add parcel 4. And frankly, you know, this applicant has been at this for 18 months, and they're pretty darn tired of coming back and doing it over and over again. And that more, and the cost. I mean, just every time we have to do this, it increases the cost. So at this point, they felt it was, they would rather not have the additional on parcel 4 rather than slow down the process. So that was really what drove that decision.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Further questions? Oh, okay. We'll close public comment, bring it back to the commission. Questions for staff or further questions? Jesse?
I have two questions for staff at this point. So this could have been accomplished with an encroachment permit?
It wouldn't have been an encroachment permit. It would have been an encroachment agreement. An encroachment agreement requires the encroachment to be removed at the direction of the city, if the city so chooses in the future. I would imagine that probably wasn't very palatable to the owner. So I'm sure they didn't like that solution.
Okay, and the second question is, I'm not a real estate guy, so please forgive me if I'm saying the terms incorrectly here, but we're not gifting public.
No, so that's what I was saying earlier. If we held fee title to it, then we'd be selling it to them. We don't own fee title. Effectively, what we have is they own to the center line of the road. And all we're doing is relinquishing our rights to what effectively is an easement, for lack of a better term.
But nevertheless, I mean, the other property owners on previous blocks and subsequent blocks are abiding by this encroachment. I guess what I'm getting at is this: if we were to do this, would this create a notable exception?
No. I mean, you look at all these types of things on their own. You know, like these are standalone things. They're not precedent setting. Properties have different issues with them. I would imagine we probably have other, you know, properties in the downtown area that have encroachments that extend across the property line.
No, I mean, we have a uniform encroachment requirement. And in the absence of demanding exceptions, we observe that encroachment.
We have an encroachment agreement process whereby you can put improvements into the right-of-way. You know, I mean, we have really wide streets in many areas of Morro Bay, and you are all aware that we don't build improvements like road improvements to the extent of those. And so several of the, especially in our residential areas, will have pretty wide right-of-ways and a narrow road section. And then you have all these different types of pavement improvements that are out there, right? Somebody's got DG, somebody's got AC paving, somebody put concrete out there, and those are all in the right-of-way. That's how the Public Works Department deals with those types of encroachments, at least the ones that people come in and ask about. They give them an encroachment agreement. And that's what I was indicating before, is that encroachment agreement says, yep, you can have this here until we say you can't, at which point you agree to remove it at your cost, which I'm thinking is probably one of the things that wasn't really desired by the owner. They didn't want that type of an agreement in place if the city could, you know, walk forward and say, remove the front of your building. And I would imagine that becomes very problematic if you were wanting to, say, sell property and that requirement was in there. It probably doesn't really solve the issue. But abandonment does. So,
Michael? Yeah, comments and questions. Yeah.
I guess the thing I'm confused about is, if I had my developer hat on, I would say I don't have any trouble adjusting the east-west lot lines at all. It's the encroachment in the right-of-way or the street that concerns me the most, because, you know, I'm a patron of Mike's. Mike did this, not although it's kind of a mess today. But, you know, when you have the bench out there and the bike and the tree, there's not a lot of sidewalk. And Pizza Port's got the little lot with the outside eating. But if those lots get filled in, the sidewalk's really compressed. And I don't think it's a good precedent to narrow the sidewalk. If I think of the block north of here, it's also impacted pretty heavily, I think, with you know, the interest in trying to get some sidewalk things happening. And I know down on the Embarcadero we talked about sidewalk width. And if we look at the things like the bike lanes, it's just, I think, as a general principle, I don't like the idea of giving up the right-of-way in the road. I can understand with the two buildings that encroach, it would be nice that if those came down with some development, that the current lot line would be respected, or rather the typical easement that the city had would be respected, rather than a lessening of that. So I'm kind of torn. I don't think there's any devious thing happening here. I do think it's one of those things. It's a paper issue from a time when Riley set up the stuff in sand, and then somebody started using lines, and the lines move because of the sand moving. And, you know, it's hard to survey anything in this town accurately. You know, we've had things here before where we've had 2-3 foot lot discrepancies that we have different surveyors saying, oh, no, it's over here. No, it's over here. And there's not good landmarks sometimes. So I don't have any wisdom, except I think it's in general a concern to narrow the sidewalk. But I think I'm probably open to hearing my colleagues talk about this a little.
Susan?
I don't have any real concerns about this, actually. I feel like if there are things with particular businesses that are encroaching on the sidewalk, that is something they should be getting permits for. For example, if it's tables and chairs, or, you know, if you're seeing that benches are taking up too much space, that is something you can report and deal with. I also think that one of the things that we have looked at is creating spaces for people to sit, to stop, to look, to observe what's different and quirky and interesting about our town. So, and I don't see this adjustment as indicating that there's going to be a grab for the sidewalk. You know, my guess is there's already kind of a line there that's continuous with the edge of the property that exists and the front of Pizza Port, for example. So to me, the process seems very logical, that to clean it up so that you can identify these lots, sell them if that's the desire, or just hold them but know that they have a specific and legal definition of their space. I don't know. We have very wide sidewalks in that area, which is a good thing, unlike what they have in the Embarcadero, where you can barely walk 2 or 3 abreast down there. So to me, this did not feel like a problem. It felt like a solution to a problem. So. Okay.
Scott, what about future improvements, such as would this encroach on, you know, on our ability to put, you know, bike lanes to adjust the parking, change the parking, create like level one bike lanes, or this 1 and 2 feet there? Is that going to impact what we're looking
at? It has no impact on the build out for our streets as they're defined currently.
Right.
That's again, you're making a finding of consistency with the general plan. You're not approving maps, lot line adjustments, or any of those types of things. So your focus is very narrow here. Like, I can understand, like, I don't, just fundamentally not liking the fact that we're potentially giving away property, right? With quotes around it, because it's not really our property. We're giving away rights, I guess, to use of the property.
Yeah, I'm more concerned about our general plan and our future parking and, you know, allowing for walkways and bikeways and stuff such as that.
It doesn't, okay, so it doesn't...
Because we have our curbs defined, and we're not going into our changes of our curbs and stuff.
It doesn't affect the current build-out within the current general plan for our street improvements, and it doesn't affect the draft general plan either.
Okay.
So it doesn't affect draft policies that we have coming forward, and it doesn't affect the current ones that we have. So you kind of have to reverse engineer this. You can't just not like it. Mm-hmm. You have to actually make a finding that there's an inconsistency with the general plan, and you're going to have to find what that inconsistency is and identify it to make a finding other than what we provided to you. I'm not saying you can't do that. I'm just saying I don't have that for you. We did the analysis and couldn't really come up with anything on that side of things. So again, it's not a we like it or don't like it. We really have to have a reason to say that we're not doing it. Certainly, we can convey that information to the council when they're reviewing and making their decision on the parcel map that you did have concerns about that, and that's fine. I'm happy to do that.
Okay. And then I have to, you know, commiserate with the applicant on this because, you know, some of the major monuments that were set for the city in the 20s and then reset in the 72, I think it moved almost 6 feet. So we have... You know, some of the geodetic monuments have moved for Morro Bay quite a bit. So we're going to, you know, we see these problems consistently on this. So, any further discussion?
Yeah, just a little bit of discussion. So Scott and I have traded a couple of emails back and forth about this week and last week, talking about consistency with the general plan. And I had some specific questions for staff, which were, you know, renewing my objection to not increasing the accessibility, the entrance to Pizza Port from the accessible parking. And, you know, I'm not going to get on that soapbox again today. I will renew my objection to not doing more to getting more of an accessible path to the entrance to Pizza Port, given that we're giving up some of the city right-of-way. So... won't get on the soapbox. I'll just say I renew my objection and leave it at that.
Okay.
So I can understand. So allowing a less than required encroachment to me seems to be inconsistent in some relevant sense with the general plan. Am I wrong in taking that interpretation?
How so?
Well,
we comply. I mean, this project would comply with the required sidewalk widths in this area and exceeds them.
Well, what about the provision that talks about not sidewalks, but the totality of the encroachment?
Totality of encroachment. I'm not sure what you're referring to. It meets the build-out width for the street.
Well, isn't there some city ordinance that, well, what's the basis for saying that the 2 feet that's underneath the building are actually the right of way of the city?
So we have classifications for all of our streets, and we have the designs that fit on those. Your circulation element includes that, as do city standards, and this meets all of those requirements. Hence the reason the Public Works Department is, I mean, they're the ones that are responsible for the street section. So that is the overall width, the width of our lanes, the width of our parking aisles, the width of our sidewalks, all of those things. And they didn't have an issue with it. And we couldn't find one either. So when we were looking at it, we didn't see any issue as it relates to the build-out of that, and which one of the reasons that the Public Works Department and City Engineer recommended them that they go down this road or, you know, take this option.
It was so this is purely, I'll call it, an historical relic, if you will, that bears no relationship to what modern street width planning would require.
Yes, and I mean we have interesting road widths in town. You know, if you take a look at the areas in the downtown, we have really wide right of ways. And so if you were to just look at that on a map and you weren't from around here, you'd think, wow, this was going to be a very large metropolitan city with lots of traffic and those types of things because we have really wide right of ways. But in almost all instances, we don't develop to the edge of them because we don't need to. We don't need wide right of ways. We when the city was laid out, that's what they established the map, but we don't, in many instances, need that width. And that's what you see, and that's what I was referring to before in some of our residential areas, you know, where you have this unimproved no man's land that's out there, and people regularly come forward to pave it so they can park cars on it and things like that. That is prevalent throughout the city. Maybe with the exception, it's a little less prevalent maybe in North Morro Bay where we have the small lots, but, you know, all the area down in this area going south, almost every street over there is like that.
Well, you know, the difficulty I have with that is that this is probably the prime commercial area of the mm-hmm. city, and as the city grows more dense, more populated, that space is going to become more valuable. And the whole controversy here seems to me to only be relevant if and when the property is sold to a subsequent developer who wants to demolish the property and build something anew. I cannot imagine the city or a judicial body believing that we might have the right to tear down the existing structures, nor do I believe that any prospective buyer would in any way feel that his purchase of the property was endangered by the prospects of these buildings having to be torn down short of him making major developments. So mm-hmm. I don't see a pressing need to abandon the property now in the event when we're not faced with new development. And in the event that we're faced with new development, it strikes me as fair to redress and move the property line of the building back.
Okay, I think we...
So we just stepped outside of the purview of the Planning right. Commission. You don't have the purview to decide whether we do abandonments or not. That is not under the purview of the Planning Commission. You have a very narrow focus. I mean, all of this is because we're all talking about it because there's a lot of moving parts here, and I understand that. But understand the job for the Planning Commission is this consistent with the general plan or not? And if you're thinking that it's not that you just don't like doing it conceptually, I appreciate that, and I am willing to convey that to the city council as when we go to council. I'm happy to do that. It's really making a finding of consistency related to the general plan that there's not some other use in there that suggested that this would be inconsistent with, which we've been unable to this point to identify, either through Public Works or through planning.
So
you're not approving the abandonment. You don't have any say as it relates to that.
Can give a crack at that. I'm not trying to prove it or disprove it. So I asked staff earlier today a question. If this parcel was blank and the front of the building was at, okay, so the setback is zero in the C1, so the building could be all the way to the property line, they would be required to provide... and the path of travel was the right-of-way, they would be required to upgrade the right-of-way to accessible path of travel standards today. So to me, the general plan today is in effect, not the general plan in 1920 when it was built, it probably wasn't one that existed. So today's general plan would require that accessible path of travel upgrade. So that's where I...
Okay.
Don't want to find an inconsistency, but if there's one to be found, that's where I think it is.
So Jesse, the way I'm reading this, that if the abandonment lot line, the new lot line, would be in effect today, they could build this building to the point where it is now, and it would meet all of our present day standards, as far as sidewalk, as far as setbacks, as such. So because of that, we're just, you know, a new construction would be able to be built here. We're not talking about, we can't really get into the fact that we've got ADA requirements, that because that's not in our purview right now, wasn't really in our purview before.
Well,
but
I disagree.
If this came before us with the new lot line on the edge of the abandonment, and with the sidewalk width and with the street width, they would meet our present-day standards, and that's what we have to...
Correct. But staff did say that the right-of-way improvements would be a requirement of the applicant.
Which ultimately has nothing to do with the decision you're making tonight.
Right.
And I also said I find it unlikely that they would go through that process. But it depends on what they're building. You know, it would be going there. And then, there's a whole other set of issues related to historical nature of what's there and all those types of things. But my guess is if you were having small buildings put back on it, like similar to what was there, if that's what they were building today, then they would be taking access from the parking lot. They wouldn't be redoing the entire sidewalk all the way around the exterior of it just because of the cost. But if you're doing something larger, there might be a project that does do that. I mean, it just depends. Well, and it's all predicated on a development application that's not in front of you. Right. And it doesn't matter where the right-of-way line is as it relates to that. It's just the requirement to be compliant with ADA. I mean, new buildings have to be compliant, period. I mean, that's not a question. It doesn't have anything, again, to do with the abandonment.
So I think we're considering whether this lot line adjustment and this meets our present day standards as far as what would allow and are we giving it an unfair advantage or setting a precedence?
I don't think so. I think like Scott's saying, we're reviewing this for consistency with the general plan. Is it consistent with today's general plan? And that's solely what I'm saying.
Okay.
But it is. It goes beyond certainly sidewalk widths in yesterday's plan and in tomorrow's plan. So
part of the general plan too, and part of the building, the present day building standards and stuff, would require this building to be sprinklered, and it's not. You know, and so we can't require the building to be sprinklered. So that's part of, you know, we can't bring this up to a present title day 24 codes because they want a lot line exemption. So we're restricted really by, you know, it's not what we want to do. We're restricted by what we can do here. We can either approve this, for my understanding, we can either approve this the way it is, or we have to have a reason why, under our present standards, we can't approve it. Is that a correct reading?
Yeah, I mean,
but I'm allowed to have a dissenting opinion.
You can, but if you want to move that, so obviously it takes three of you to do anything.
Yeah.
Either to make the required finding or not. Okay.
Right.
If you're choosing not to make it, then you need to make a finding why it's inconsistent. Otherwise, we're gonna be in front of council, and I'm gonna go, yep, they didn't approve it, they didn't make the finding, but they couldn't tell me why. You don't want me to do that. The city council won't appreciate that.
I think we can approve it with comments.
And like I said, I'm happy to convey that while you can make the finding, it's consistent. You're uncomfortable and don't like it. You know, I mean, like the idea of it. Think it's a bad idea to get rid of the property. I'm happy to convey that information to them.
Okay. So I think you can state, you know, that you have these concerns on this.
Well, with all due respect, I think I'm allowed to say whatever I want.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
So. Yeah, but if you say something and you're the only one saying it, that doesn't mean that we have to put it in the resolution.
Sure. I agree with that.
So, you know, so what we have before us is, does this meet the standards or not? And I think that's what we have to move on. So does anybody else have anything further to say on this?
Yeah, I'm going to acknowledge that I clearly do not have the expertise to think of an imaginative way that this is inconsistent with the general plan. I simply don't have, and I'm willing to accept that it is in fact consistent, and I'm going to acknowledge that I can't think of a clever way to prove that it's inconsistent. I can just remember an old axiom: if that is the law, then the law is an ass. So, that's
yeah.
But at the same time, we have engineers on our public works staff, and we have our planning staff who know this field, know what they are talking about, understand the nuts and bolts of this, and feel that it makes sense. So that it's not only consistent with the existing general plan and the future general plan, but that it makes sense in terms of policy for the city, in terms of not standing in the way of reasonable requests from business owners, property owners, for basically, again, adjusting a line that was drawn in the sand to begin with. So.
And I would also note that Ms. Heath was correct, that this path forward was determined through also consultation with the city attorney's office as the correct path forward to address the issues that were in front of them. So, I'd add that to it as well.
It's been
well reviewed, I guess, from the staff standpoint.
I'll make one statement. I don't care what the city engineer says or the city attorney. We're tasked with protecting the design aspects of the community, and that's why we're here. If we'd just be a rubber stamp if that was the case. So I'd want to object to. They took care of. There's no utility issue. They took care of. There's no problem with parking. Perhaps they understood, based on the city cross sections of traffic with the bike lanes, that was all right. But when I look at adding multiple floors to the downtown in the future, I'm looking at Google Earth up and down the street here, and you know, the street trees are massive. They're going to be redone at some point when that era of trees comes in, and I just don't see any benefit to establishing a 9-foot or whatever it is resultant sidewalk that's narrower than the adjacent ones. If you go up and down Morro Bay Boulevard, every successful business seems to have an impacted front on the sidewalk. And I think in the future when these lots are developed, it could be something that the general plan is not just for the traffic and the infrastructure. It's for the pedestrian-friendly downtown we're trying to do. And so a 1-foot or 2-foot makes a difference. You know, that's my concern. I think the engineers do great with engineering tasks, but this isn't an engineering task. It's not just a legal task. Otherwise, it wouldn't come here.
So what is the measurement from the new adjusted lot line to curb? It doesn't say so on the plan.
On this, you mean the right way?
No, what is the sidewalk width after the lot line's been adjusted?
So I didn't physically measure it. I walked it off and I took it from the survey maps. But okay. The inside edge of the curb to the new lot line on Main would be 13.
Okay.
And so, on Morro Bay Boulevard would be 14. Whether the curb is exactly in the same space that it was drawn originally, I don't know. I didn't have a measurement to. Okay. I just used my feet, and that's not always so accurate.
On the large map, it doesn't give a dimension that I found on that. So we're beyond our 10 foot requirement. So that's all that's what I see mostly. And that's what I'm concerned about most.
Would it be consistent with the general plan to do the encroachment agreement? I think it would be. I don't think we have to do this. I think this is the easy way out. And I think the city engineer just said, yeah, give it to him. I don't want it. That's my opinion. I realize I'm in the minority here, and that's okay.
Okay.
We all seem to be looking at different ways, explanations, to not abandon this. And we're all striving for a different rationale, but we may not be in disagreement.
Can you turn your mic up, please?
Oh. Well, it's on, but I'll speak into it. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, let's see if we can get a motion, and then we can have a discussion on that and see where it goes. So, Susan, do you want to...
I'll try it out. I'm going to make
might
it,
as well.
I'm going to make
one.
It easy. I would move to approve resolution number 04-19, a resolution of the Morro Bay Planning Commission recommending approval to the City Council to adopt a resolution of intention to abandon a portion of Main Street and Morro Bay Boulevard, S00-130. Is that correctly done?
Yep, I believe so. Do we have a second? You know, for discussion, I'll second it. Okay, let's have our discussion. Jesse, go ahead.
I think I've said how I feel about it. I just feel there's other options. I don't feel this is the best one.
Okay. Joseph?
Yeah, I'm going to have to echo that. I mean, it's already been acknowledged that there are other ways to accomplish that, but it appears that those are not consistent with finding that method. I mean, if we must find that it's inconsistent with the general plan, the only thing that I've heard that seems to approach that inconsistency are some of the suggestions that Commissioner Lucas has made about looking at the general plan and what it means 10 or 15 years from now when we have second-story buildings on most of these properties. I mean, I think clearly, consistent with the general plan would be to have wider sidewalks rather than narrower sidewalks when we're faced with two-story construction. I realize that's sort of several leaps from what we're dealing with right now in the general plan.
Okay, Michael?
I understand it's an issue. I'm more sensitive about accepting it for lot one. Like I said, I don't have any trouble with the adjustment of the yellow lines up there that separate 1, 2, 3, and 4. But I'd be more open to the strategy merely on lot one than the whole block.
Okay, Susan.
I guess I don't see how we're necessarily losing sidewalk. It's a line adjustment. I feel like the city is actually likely gaining money again from the property tax rolls because of the increased assessment for the property. I would guess that, say, lot 2 and lot 3 sold, anybody coming forward and wanting to do redevelopment on those lots is going to have to approach this body about whatever encroachment they might be making on the existing sidewalk, and having to make those improvements could be rather costly. I don't know. So I don't feel that we're losing anything in this.
Okay. I'm coming down to following, you know, basically following the rules on this. I can't come up with a standard or a reason why, if the remaining sidewalk meets our standards, and for now and for future development, you know, I don't understand how I can't come up with a finding to say that this shouldn't be allowed. That's, you know, we have things that I would like to see a lot of things, but I don't have the backing and I don't have the rules behind me to say that's what will be done. So that's kind of where I'm sitting on this. I think sometimes we've got to follow our rules, whether we want to or not. So guess at this point,
I think that's well said, because I've said often enough at these meetings, you know, about the danger of being capricious and following, you know, your own thoughts rather than what the letter of the city ordinance actually says. So that's well said and thoughtful.
Yeah. Well, I guess if I have any trouble with this, it's so we have to find a determination that it's inconsistent with the general plan, but there are other options that are also consistent with the general plan, and I think we're kind of being herded into a singular train of thought when I'm not sure I want to be herded.
Well, that's what we have before us. We can either,
right,
you know, if we deny it, we have to have a reason why we deny it. So that's just what
I would say, that the reason that it's, because this isn't the only path. So, I mean, I guess if there's a, I'm not comfortable with this determination when it's not the only solution to the issue, and we are giving away things that belong to the public. So at the end of this discussion, that's where I land.
Okay. Okay, I guess we should call the question and see where we sit and then go from there.
Okay. Commissioner Lucas?
No.
Commissioner Stewart?
Yes.
Commissioner Barone?
No.
Commissioner Ingrafia?
No.
Chairperson Lohr?
I'd say yes. Okay, so that motion fails. Where do we want to go with it? Who has a suggestion for the next motion?
I have one.
Okay,
could
Jesse?
We entertain a motion to further explore both Commissioner Lucas's concerns and mine with maybe limiting the abandonment to Lot 1, A, and B, exploring the encroachment agreement also?
Scott, where do we stand on that as far as what?
Right now, you've sort of walked off the edge of what we're doing. So if that's what you adopt, I'll take that forward. It doesn't have really anything to do with what was in front of you. But I will take it forward as the action taken by the Planning Commission, and the Council will have to decide what they want to do.
Okay. So at this point, could the applicant come forward and we'll reopen public comment? Okay, so I think where we are right now is we can deny the way it sits. We've denied the motion, so we can set a motion for denial. We can have another motion for denial, and then you could appeal to the City Council. What would be the applicant's most time sensitive path from here, Scott?
I'm not really sure that the council can't just make the decision as it relates to the map when they review it next
but
week.
I think.
Okay. Whether we approve it or deny it?
You're not approving or denying anything.
Okay.
So you're making a finding of consistency. You're saying it's not, but you're not really even doing that. You're giving some other third option to go study stuff that's not under the purview of the Planning Commission. Encroachment agreements are not part of the purview of the Planning Commission. That's not granted to you. This comes down to the fact that the Planning Commission is uncomfortable making a recommendation for consistency because you don't want to give away the property. I understand that. And I'm happy to convey that to the City Council. What you've not done is made a finding as to why it's inconsistent with the general plan. You just said, I don't like the process we're going through and don't do it. And for lack of a better way forward, we'll convey that. And I'll have to, talk with the city attorney tomorrow and just find out. Because I think the city council can probably just take it up and still approve the maps, I think, if they want.
I guess, Scott, based on these arguments I'm hearing, what we said it before, but what's to keep anybody from saying, I want the land up to the 10 feet of the sidewalk? That seems to be the rationale. That's the only rationale I'm hearing, is the sidewalk's 10 feet, all the utilities are in the 10-foot sidewalk. There's no reason to not reduced everything down to 10 feet sidewalk.
I don't think we're interested in doing any of those things. I think this is a very specific case, and when it was looked at through the Public Works Department, they didn't seem to have an issue with abandoning it and making it consistent through the lots. I mean, we don't have anything that suggests that we need it for other purposes there. And so this is the methodology and the method and direction to pull that forward.
So, Scott, is there... At this point, we're 3-2 on this. Is there anything else that we need to do then, or
so you need to make whatever other motion you're going to make? You need to make a decision.
Okay.
So I'm okay if you don't make a decision and make the finding it's inconsistent with the general plan for whatever reason. I'd prefer that you actually did that, but it doesn't sound like you want to or maybe are able to. So I'll take whatever decision you make. At least I can convey your concerns about the overall concept here to the City Council in the form of the motion and action that you took. I'm fine doing that.
I have a question.
Okay.
So if it's not under the purview of the Planning Commission to
direct encroachment
to direct encroachment agreements, as you said, and I believe you. So if that's not true, then why were we consulted?
You need to talk to the state of California.
So
I mean, so if you look in your staff report, I provided you the California government code.
I
agree that this is a weird process, but nonetheless, it exists, and it's because you're the land use authority for the city.
I guess to my point, so if we're the land use authority for the city, why do we not have purview over encroachment agreements?
Because it's not written into our ordinances. The purview of those rests with the Public Works Department.
There's no one in the audience disputing this. We did get some correspondence that disputed it, but they didn't come here on the record tonight. I'm just kind of aghast that we don't have anything to say about people saying, I want to move my lot lines toward the center of the street based on an arbitrary 10-foot sidewalk thing when we've got so many documents talking about redevelopment of downtown. Every one of those people across the street could potentially be impacted by the height changes and new construction over here that now moves closer to their property when they assumed the property line that's in the record would be the one that would be viable. So that seems to me to be a pretty significant issue, that we're looking at a volume issue that is now changing the street profile in cross-section for a whole set of residents who may or may not, there's nobody out here that I can see is interested in it, but in theory it's something that makes a difference in the way the properties develop down the line.
Okay, Michael, hold that thought.
I just want to be clear and make sure we're talking about the same thing, because nobody's moving any sidewalks. When we go out there tomorrow, whether you do this or not, it's going to look exactly the way it's looked for the last 60 years at least, right? The only issue is the right-of-way. The applicant already owns fee title all the way to the middle of the street. That doesn't change. You're not giving away anything. What you're doing is you're saying, we have a right-of-way, and we don't, and the city engineer, the Public Works Department, is saying, we have a right-of-way that we don't need. We have determined as a city, as a body, over a course of time, that we need at least 10 feet for a sidewalk in this area. That hasn't changed. It's not going to change. The sidewalk that's out there is currently however wide it is. It's not going to get any wider. It's not going to get any narrower by virtue of what you're doing. What it's doing is it's correcting a lot line that is essentially incorrect. So just making the point that I think there's some worry that there's something being given up here, and it really is giving up nothing.
Yeah. The only point I'd dispute on that, and I'm not, is that for future development.
That's
where, you know, okay. Where I see the fly in the ointment is on future development and on the other two lots that do not have the encroachment on them. So that's I think where the concern is. So let me try something. Let's close public comment and let's bring it back to the commission. Okay, so
excuse me.
Has
it been established that the lot line, and excuse me, I don't even know how to phrase this. I don't think it's been established that the encroachment necessarily is incorrect, because it could be that the property line is incorrect. At some time in the past, we really don't know who was making the mistake, and I'm not implying any sort of intention, but it could just as easily be that at the time the lot was divided, sold, built upon, that the mistake was made by.
You know, tomorrow if they resurveyed the general monuments, the basis monuments, all these lot lines could change another foot or 2 feet again. So we're kind of dancing on straws here, dancing on pinheads for this.
My point is it's not simply a case that we are correcting a previous error in the favor of the rightful property owner. It hasn't been established where the error actually lies, just that there's an inconsistency.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so what if we, Scott, what if we adopt the resolution for 0419 with the findings that the right-of-way abandonment is consistent with the City of Morro Bay general plans, but we have concerns with the, you know, with, would you say the precedence is set or the future, you know, how would you guys want to word it? With the prospect for future development that encroaches into the sidewalk area. Michael, what do you want to say? What are your concerns?
I think anything like that would be helpful. I mean, I have no axe to grind against what's going on up here, other than to me, conceptually, it's an open invitation to change every block in town that has a more than 10-foot sidewalk.
Well, there has to be findings from the city that would be appropriate.
But the only thing they apparently care about is whether there's tubes underneath that area.
That's not the only thing that the Public Works Department looked at. No. They just looked at, was it needed there? What was the width of the sidewalk and those types of things? We have wide sidewalks there. We have wider sidewalks there than we have elsewhere in the city. So they did, that was taken into consideration when they looked at it. It was, you know, how does the street function and those types of things. I mean, it wasn't.
But as Commissioner Lucas is saying, I mean, an aesthetic consideration should be part of this discussion and certainly decision making.
Okay, so we can say that it meets the standards, and then I think if you guys want to add to the motion, what your concerns are on the abandonment, that's what I think we can send up to the city council, because your concerns aren't going to be heard.
I almost wonder if we just, I mean, it seems, in terms of procedure, we voted, it did not pass. It Correct. Feels like at this point, do a Supreme Court thing and you can have the dissenting opinions send a letter to council on both sides of what their reasons were for or against. But I don't feel like we're in a position to make a whole new resolution. Is that procedurally what we would do?
I think we can. You know, Scott, I think we can make a new motion, not make a new resolution, but, you know, concur that nobody nobody up here has an issue with the consistency of the general plan. But what we have is concerns about future development, or we have concerns about sidewalk encroachment.
I have questions about the consistency with the general plan.
Okay.
I guess the thing that disturbed me more than anything else was there's nothing in the future documents to change this either. And I would say we should have something in the future document that says if you want to move the face of the existing building lines into the sidewalk, that's an issue. Because I think most people assume the lot line buildable area is established on some of these lots where you have this kind of urban face. And now we're saying no. You might have 2 to 3 feet additional area that you can move away. And it's one thing to say I've got a one-story building in a two-story zone, but it's another thing to say that's the acknowledged front of the building, but we're going to give everybody on the block another 2 feet because we don't have any pipes underneath that 2 feet. That seems to be as arbitrary as it is.
Like I said, this actually has the issue of having the encroachment, hence the reason this is in front of you. It has the encroachment. The solution they came up with was to do the abandonment, and then they extended it down to lot 3, and I think, you know, the city engineer was fine extending it down to the end of the block, but that's not where they went.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Scott. So no matter what you've said this before. No matter what we say today, the city council can just turn around and say, "Well, they were."
Well, they can, but they pay attention to what you do.
Yeah,
right.
Which is the reason why I said, "Hey, I will convey what you come up with as the motion because you have a real concern, and I understand the concern. I mean, I get where you're coming from. I don't think it's somehow out of the realm of you having that feeling as it relates to this thing that's in front of you. I mean, I get where you're at. We're kind of narrowly focused. Now, I have another idea.
Okay.
Okay. You could make the motion and not include lots 2 and 3 and just do it for lot 1. That just deals with the encroachments. Those other two lots don't have them. We just talked to the property owner. And they seemed okay with that. So if you're interested in that, and that maybe gets rid of some of the concern that you're having, and it stops the precedent setting thing. And I mean, I'm And if you're not okay with that, fine. But I mean, we figured we'd ask them if they were if that works for them, and they seem to be okay with it. So if you're willing to consider that, then maybe you want to talk about that for a minute or two. If not,
so be it. So Scott, do we have the ability to restrict future development to the existing lot lines and not on the abandoned portion?
Once you abandon, no,
okay. No, okay.
So I like that idea. I feel like maybe that can bring everybody to the table in a positive way, and it allows for something to remain historically intact, mm-hmm. you know, so that it puts them more in compliance. And if they're comfortable with the little jog, and again, it's not an actual jog, it's a conceptual jog.
Right.
In lines in the sky, not on the sidewalk. I think that's a good solution.
I'm comfortable with acknowledging an existing condition that precedes our documents. That's what that would be doing, as far as I'm concerned.
Joseph?
Yes, I would find that narrowing acceptable.
Jesse?
Suppose that would do it.
Okay, let's.
I want to. Maybe I could help Commissioner Barone out a little bit, struggling. this is actually a fairly, probably a little more of an elegant solution because it also affords the opportunity, if the property were to redevelop, to reacquire that area or to have that area paved as additional sidewalks, so you don't, at some point in the future when redevelopment happens, have the jog. Right? Because it's a discretionary process. So you could either get it back in the form of an easement, actual improvements, so you wouldn't have that change. And so that would be part of a discretionary process in the future. And it would be shown on a plan. So if somebody wanted to redevelop the property and wanted to take advantage of that, they would be showing the improvements going up to them and then jogging over, which I think anybody sitting in your chairs would find odd.
Well and I'm gonna speak frankly here. So lots 2 and 3, I mean, there's some very old houses on those properties. It's very unlikely that those houses have a lifespan of more than 5 more years. I'm speaking out of turn. I shouldn't put a number on it. Those houses have approached their lifespan. So the redevelopment of those lots is extremely likely in the foreseeable future. So for us to lump those lots 2 and 3 into the lot 1 problem was my issue.
Yeah. So essentially let me help you out that the higher and best usage of those lots are probably not with the existing structures. So, yeah. Okay, so let's have a motion on that. Does somebody want to try that one?
So would we restate this but then add an amendment that it would only include the area around lot
that
one?
Restate the recommendation.
Okay.
We restate that and have the lot line adjustment or the abandonment for lot 1 only.
Okay.
But the other east-west lines are satisfactory.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
And you know what? I mean, realistically, hypothetically, the real estate office across the street, let's just say it has the exact same problem. We wouldn't want to take the entire plane of those other businesses along the way, along Main Street, also. So,
and quite frankly, it probably does have the same problem.
It may,
Don't tell them.
Okay. So, Scott, do you have that wording on that?
So, I think you can adopt the resolution with the way that it is, with the clarification that it applies only to lot 1.
Okay. Do we have a second for that?
I'll second.
Okay. I assume, Susan, that you're going to...
That's what I moved, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Just for clarity. And then Michael seconds. So let's call the question on that.
Commissioner Lucas?
Aye.
Commissioner Stewart?
Yes.
Commissioner Barone?
Aye.
Commissioner Ingrafia?
Aye.
Chairperson Lohr?
Yes. Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. Okay, here we go with... Thank you, Nancy. Okay, item... Yeah. Are you guys good, or you want to take a minute, or are we good to go with this? Everybody good to go? Okay. Okay, so item number C1, Planning Commission Fiscal Year 19-20 Work Plan. Scott?
Just give me one second here so I can pull my staff report out.
Are you ready to go, or you need a couple minutes? Or?
No, I'm good, unless you want to take a break. I'm ready.
Okay, I think everybody's good to go. Let's power on.
Okay, so we've done the work plan, you know, discussion in the past, and this sort of gives you an idea about things that we're working on, things that we could be working on, gives you an idea about how much capacity the department has, because we actually have a lot of things coming up in this next year, including housing element updates, adoption of the 2019 building code. We're going to be picking up our climate action plan. So there are a number of things that, you know, internally we're going to be working on as we hopefully get done with our general plan and LCP. but there are things available to you, and I kind of gave you an initial list, and I gave you some links to some of our existing documents that have, like, our economic development strategic plan, our downtown waterfront strategic plan. Those have implementing sections in the back that talk about things that we should be doing over time. Those are things that the council also uses for their goal setting process that they're in the process of right now. So I'm hoping to get some input from you about things you might like to do. You see a list of things on here that include, the wayfinding sign program, complete plan Morrow Bay, prepare a vacation rental ordinance, right? Again, the 2019 building code, housing element, implementation possibilities, you know, take a look at those again for the parking management plan, climate action plan. Do we want to pick up the residential design guidelines and do a check on that? And then I think Chair Luer's favorite, the development of our commercial design guidelines. We can pick up and would be able to, if we wanted to do that, I could bring all the other guideline information that we have that's located in the downtown and waterfront strategic plan. Those have commercial design guidelines in it. Would be a good place to start, and we could do it by area. We have those planning areas that we identified in draft in current plan Morrow Bay. And maybe there's things that I didn't put down here that you have interest in, and certainly be happy to, you know, take any of that input. And my idea would be when we're done here, maybe this evening, I'd be able to convey that information to council so we can roll that into the goal setting process that the council is currently in.
Okay. I think I'm going to take point on this and just ask. Do we need to open the public comment on this?
You certainly can if you'd like. You can ask if you have a question or you just want to have comment at the end, take public comment and then roll from there. That's probably a good idea.
I think we'll open this for public comment if anybody's wishing to speak. Yeah, thanks.
I was hoping you'd do it after so I could prepare better. But it just so happens that I have the letter that the chamber submitted to the city council in advance of its goals and objectives. So I thought you might like to hear a few of them that relate to you. If I can find them. Immediate forward movement on the sign ordinance and general community signing with special emphasis on needed exposure for Morrow Bay's business by freeway travelers. So that kind of speaks to some of this lobbying to Caltrans to try and make sure that what we're doing within the city limits links in with potential signage off of the highway. Refreshing the LEAP and implementing it. Evaluation and implementation of existing circulation and parking management plans, especially for the Embarcadero area and other options for the downtown and economic centers. I think that lines up with the discussion of the 2007 parking management plan. Sorry for the breaks. To continue to focus on the role of tourism, including vacation rentals and RV park tourism business improvement district assessment options.
We're going to need to take a break. We're actually off the air. They'll let us know when we're back on
the air. All right, good. I got another minute. Perfect. Saved.
Let's go ahead and take five.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. I think we got... We had some storm damage or something.
video?
Without video.
Without the subtitle.
And so we'll have the video, but we just won't have the subtitle.
You don't want the bottom part.
Yeah.
Okay,
fine. We just won't have the subtitle.
Bottom
graphics.
We'll have the video.
Okay.
So.
Which I think is fine.
Okay. Well, welcome back, everybody. We had a nice technological interlude. So we were on public comment. Would you like to?
I feel badly if I'm, well, so I guess just an easier way to reverse this is I think the Chamber's letter would fully support finalizing the wayfinding signage design plan and deploy the signs. Completing the plan Morro Bay, 100% supportive of that. Preparing a vacation rental ordinance ties in with a goal or a suggestion, which was to continue to focus on the role of tourism, including vacation rentals and RV park T-bid assessment options, improvement of local RevPAR and average daily rate, overall tourism effort and effectiveness. So I think it's in line with sort of improving and moving forward with improving TOT, really, and revenues for the city. And then absolutely, 2007 parking management plan is something that the Chamber is supportive of, you know, bringing that to discussion and moving parking, a conversation about parking forward.
Okay.
That's all I got. Thanks.
Okay, since great. Thank you. Would anybody else like to speak to this item? Okay. Seeing none, I'll close public comment and bring it back. I'm going to kind of take the lead on this. And as you all have known, I've had a pet project of getting the, you know, design guidelines. We've done the residential design guidelines, and I think it's, you know, really important that we get to the commercial design guidelines. We can, you know, there's a, you know, we've got the districts that we've already designated. And we can do the design guidelines relative to each of those districts, and we can all have our input on that. There are things that we're going to have to do, and you know, such as the local coastal plan and the GP. We're going to have to do the housing element. We're going to have to do the, you know, probably the short-term vacation rental, and also the signs are things that we're probably going to have to do. But I would like to, if I could, I would like to get the recommendation from the commission that our prime concern and the one thing that we would really like to see get done this next fiscal year is the commercial design guidelines. I think that, for me, that seems to have the most economic impact and for the city and for the outlook for the city for the next however many decades coming up to get a start on that. So what are you guys' thoughts on as such on that?
Seems like a really good time to be doing it given, you know, we do have the general plan in the pipeline and there are specific things in that relate to design elements. We've got the waterfront strategic plan has, you know, that's a commercial area. We've got the Market Plaza commercial area. And so all of these different plans are sort of in the works. And to pull in commercial design guidelines at this point, to me, makes sense because hopefully we have some movement and development in town. And it would be nice to have something in place to be able to say, yeah, that really fits. That sounds great, you know, and to give people something to move forward. So,
yeah.
If okay. Staff has time.
Yeah. Well, we have recommendations to staff, you know, for what if, you know. Mm-hmm. And so what I've seen over the years is that, you know, we have limited staff time that we can dedicate their staff time, or we can ask for their staff time for.
So, I mean, so the good part about it is if you're interested in this, I can convey that to the council. And our budgeting, our goal setting process is 2 years. Mm-hmm. So while, I mean, it'd be nice if we finished it in one fiscal year, but given the other, all the other things that we have, that might not be possible, but I don't see any reason why we wouldn't be able to get it done in two. And I would ask the council to budget against that. So as opposed to, I mean, we did the residential design guidelines, and some of you weren't here, but some of you were. And we took 11 months and, 11 meetings to get us through the process. But we did it, and then we've tweaked it a little bit since then. But it was a good process. I think it'd be worthwhile if I could throw a little bit of money at it to get a consultant to prepare some graphics for us. Mm-hmm. So it wouldn't be a lot of money, but it would be maybe to get some, some graphics of the types of things we'd like to see. So you can provide a little bit higher level of a professional document when we're done. So that was kind of my thought. So if you are interested in that, that's what I would be looking to do with it.
Okay. Michael?
Yeah, I think there's a network of things that I think you have to see how they interchange. My own interest is in making sure, as the state keeps suing towns for not having proper housing elements, that we are really cognitive of the different ways that can work. I think having gone through the general plan draft and the way that we're looking at increasing opportunities for housing downtown, it means there's going to be a nexus between commercial development and residential development mm-hmm. downtown. So you can't talk about the commercial development guidelines unless you start talking about a large portion, perhaps, of that development is going to be residential. And how do those things interact? And then so I think that's important. And I think the quality of housing that we have is impacted by the vacation rentals. It's been kind of quiet for a while, but we had so much testimony of the residents in these inundated areas, as well as the testimony of the people who like to take advantage of these opportunities to visit here. So it's kind of a, if we can sort that out as a housing, temporary housing, long-term housing, how that works downtown and what the commercial design guidelines are, I think that's a really important thing. Now, the lateral network part of that then is, how do you deal with things like the parking issues? Because if we're going to densify parts of the downtown, get away from the ghost town after 5 o'clock kind of thing, how does the parking work? So I think that's an issue, and I certainly respect the idea about the signage. That the signage is not my thing, but I know that if it means that the visitors who are important to our business people have a good wayfinding way, I think that's an important thing too. But I would say, to me, it kind of is that housing commercial opportunity thing that the master plan or the plan Morro Bay brought forward. We've got to look at them kind of simultaneously.
And this, by having the commercial design guidelines once again, this feeds into the implementation of the general plan, local coastal plan. So
I think we'll see a lot of hybrid kinds of projects we haven't seen before. Mm-hmm. And if we don't have some kind of idea about what is the range, we've got this beautiful eclectic town in a lot of ways, and we can accept a lot of things, but we have to know where the boundaries of that acceptance is.
Okay. Joseph?
I agree. Work on the housing element. For me, the short-term vacation rental is an important aspect in getting that cleared up. And likewise, we've talked so often about the needs for commercial design guidelines. The only thing I'd like to add, but I admit it's a lesser concern, is I wish we could get started on some sort of historical preservation or beef it up. And I realize, the tough part is the taking of property issue. And the sooner we bite into that and figure out what we're doing, the better.
Well, I mean, the great part about that is the Historical Society is picking that up. I mean, they're starting to move that forward, which is great because they'll be able to get a lot more. I'm helping them a little bit on the survey work that they're going to be doing and provided a little bit of our GIS time to put together an application for them so that they can go do the windshield survey through town so they can see what we have out there, identify the type building types that we have, and they're using a couple of architectural historians to help them, which I think is fantastic that they're willing to pick that up. And then they want to, after they've done that, look and see what we have. We'll be able to have that on a map, including all the pictures that they put together through our GIS system. And then they'll be able to work on policy, and then they'll be able to kind of bring that in, and I mean, it's something we can start with. So that's kind of exciting to have a group that's willing to pick that up. It's not a small task. And you know,
and then Joseph also, I'm going to beat this horse here, you know, that the commercial guidelines will address, one of the things that it does address is historic buildings and how they're dealt with. So, you know, that gives us a tool to work with that we don't have right now. So I think that's important too. Jesse?
So, yeah, commercial design guidelines are definitely important. It would definitely be top of a short list. I'm all for striking while the iron's hot, so I think the vacation rental ordinance should be something where, you know, if I had to put something at the top of the list, I'd want to put that, only because there's been so much talk about it. I'm not sure what our role in that that ordinance drafting would be, but striking while the iron's hot sounds like it would be...
Yeah, I mean, just so as a little reminder, it was part of Plan Morro Bay, and then with some of the tweaks the Planning Commission made to it, a bunch of folks came out. The managers of vacation rentals were unhappy with it. We had the forum that was sort of run by current Mayor Heading. We had about 110 people there. Those people that came down on both sides of it. When I came out of that, I realized there was probably little chance that we were able to get to form an ordinance while we were going through Plan Morro Bay. So I took it out, set it on the side, and said, when we're done with Plan Morro Bay, we're going to come back and pick it up. That'll be, as soon as we're done with Plan Morro Bay, that'll be the first thing that I pick up and move forward, because that's what I've promised the community. I don't have the capacity to do it while we're doing both. I mean, I spend a full day a week on Plan Morro Bay, if not more, as does Cindy Jacinth, our senior planner. That's a full day a week that I, yeah, I mean, don't, I, don't I don't even have. So maybe imagine.
To
so
be understood. For
so
sure.
While the general plan LCP is going on, it's you know, it is hard to, you know, add capacity in. But I think that would be the first thing that we pick up when we're done. And that's what I've told council. So we will be doing that. And I don't think there's any, you know, any question there. There's a desire. People want us to do it now. I mean, there's only one of me.
Yeah, I always considered that as part of the Plan Morro Bay.
I had to pull it out because we couldn't finish it with it, because it was going to take a whole another planning effort, probably forming some sort of ad hoc committee of some sort with folks on both sides to sit down and work through it. And then there's a couple of, at least Pismo recently had theirs adopted, and the Coastal Commission liked the format. So at least there's a starting point from a community that's, you know, in San Luis Obispo County, which is good. And I know... I think even the county right now is working through an update of one of their, you know, the community plans as it relates to their...
The Coastal Commission struck down one of them, too. Was it Santa Barbara?
Yes. So, and then we also have some issues with judicial issues where they're, you know, especially from New York, you know, we have some judicial rulings on what the cities can do and how they can restrict them and stuff. So that has just come down lately in the last month or so too. So I think this is going to be it's going to be a moving target to hit on that.
Could be.
So finishing up. Okay. So anyway, I do think that's probably where I would prioritize our time, which it sounds like you're on the same board. Commercial design guidelines are very important. I'm totally on that. This is a great list. The historical property thing is a great idea item to maybe work into the work plan. Maybe something about the Centennial Corridor and lateral access. But I'm sure that'll all kind of come through with the GP, LCP stuff. So great list. I think we're looking good.
Okay. Okay, so
I did have one small thing. Yeah. There's in all the Plan Morro Bay things, it struck me that we do have this one issue, environmental issue. The two things that I think we repeatedly talked about was the idea of trying to enhance eshas, you know, rather than looking at them as something, oh, we have an esha here. We should be looking at that as an opportunity in development, trying to create some green corridors through here for, you know, wildlife and species. But the other thing was the kind of large tree repository somewhere, you know, because I know with the way I see PG&E going around town now, it's like everything's coming down. And we're really going to, if we don't have something that we're looking for 15, 20 years down the line, starting to reclaim some of our large trees, we're going to really have a deforestation of the large species that I think is going to hurt us. So whether that's us working with Parks and Rec on something, or looking at the land that the city has control over and identifying appropriate places that don't impact view corridors or disrupt, you know, recreational uses.
Michael, I think we can tie, we tried to tie that in with the general plan update. And I think that's, we can put that into the implementation and bring that up as we go through the review of that. And I think that's a really important section of the ESHA.
I just know that every time we just had the people talk about the tanks coming down and the seven large trees and the the state park's constantly doing thinning in there, and whether it's a relationship with one of these other things, it is an implementation item that should be pretty easy to do. It's just finding the right places to do it.
Yeah, I think that's really important too, and I think bring that back up when we get in through the, you know, the ESHA and the, and then also, you know, just if we were just talking about, you know, the development there by the high school, you know, having those, you know, protection on those cypress, you know, those cypress, Monterey cypress there, I think is really critical, you know, and have interplanting with new cypress underneath that understory so that when, because they're reaching their maturity date and when that comes back to us to, you know, to look at that so that we interplant, so we're planning for the next 30, 40 years.
That's really significant all over town. I know we've lost a lot of the big trees in the downtown, never got replaced. I know the street I live on has massive Monterey pines that are coming down. They're dying.
Yeah.
And it's their lifespan, but they're not getting replaced.
Well, they were planted by the Boy Scouts in the 50s.
Right.
And you used to be able to look up in North Morro Bay, and all you could see were trees, you know. Yeah, and it's deforested because of the beetle and the droughts, the late 80 droughts and stuff brought down a lot of those trees and stuff. So anyway, Scott, I think we had consent. I'm hoping we had consensus on the commercial design guidelines.
So I think commercial design guidelines, I think the ESHA enhancement thing, we're going to push through Plan Morro Bay. We have that comment in there. I remember looking at it in the list of 350 comments that we reviewed and provided responses to. He'll be getting that once we get the zoning code and Plan Morro Bay back from Coastal.
If I can ask a question. Yeah. Last meeting we talked about the fire code and the fire sprinkler ordinance and possibly getting the fire marshal in for a discussion on that.
Yeah.
So maybe, I know that's not till November that we have to actually implement those, but I mean, if we can kind of put that on the radar of something maybe we want to do down
the road. I put it on the list of presentations to bring forward to you. We're picking that up in early summer. We're going to start working on that then. And so I thought I'd bring it, you know, in the beginning of that process so you could provide input and hear what I don't even know exactly all what fire wants to do because we haven't sat down and talked about it. So
sprinkle everything?
Huh?
Sprinkle everything?
Well, it's fire, so yes.
So Scott, we're, you know, if I'm, that ties into the wildland interface, the wildfire, wildland fire interface. Mm-hmm. Do we have that, you know, as far as, if I remember right, through the hazard maps, that the only place we had that was down by the state park.
There was a small area there, yeah. It was in city limits, yeah.
So nowhere else, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's nowhere else in the city that has the requirement for the wildland interface.
Urban interface, no.
kind of a funny outtake to that. So after the conversation you and I had, or we had at the meeting, I have jurisdiction over the surrounding area when I'm in my day job. So a lot of areas that you would think between here and San Luis that probably should be in the WUI aren't either. So there are some definite discrepancies in that map, and CAL FIRE is the makers of the map. So
yeah, and they're interesting. They even have like moderate fire hazard zones over the grazing land that we have over there too. So I mean, they got all kinds of weird. I mean, like. Fire doesn't care at all about that, you know. I mean, that's easy to knock down. It's not really a concern, but they have it as kind of a elevated, you know, level in their maps, which is weird, since it's grassland that's grazed.
And in some areas that are extremely high fire aren't identified.
I don't know how they go about doing all that. I know it's, we don't really have much to say over it. Anyway.
Okay. So is everybody good on that?
Anything else?
I've got one that may or may not fit here. Maybe it's more of a public works thing. I don't know. But I'd written down evaluate resources in commercial and residential areas and make recommendations for improvements, specifically thinking about restrooms, seating, parking, so that would fall under that, the wayfinding signage, emergency services, parks. Parks was one thing we came up a little short in the general plan in terms of statistically how much park area we should have, food sources, and all of that kind of thing would relate to the future planning in terms of commercial, well, and residential too, projects coming in. So, you know, what do we want to see? So say some new development wants to come into the downtown area. Do we consider conditioning provide a public restroom, you know, a full restroom, mm-hmm. not just a public toilet? Looking at, you know, again, parks, bicycle parking.
Yeah. Do we?
You know. I think as part of the commercial design guidelines, yeah. we could have a conversation yeah, about so, that. Yeah. And I mean, I've even seen some guidelines that jurisdictions use where they identify, you know, like they kind of have those buffer maps and they say, hey, mm-hmm. this is where we have them and then we mm-hmm. this is where we don't have them. And so it says, hey, within this area, we should have X number, yeah. you know, and then they use that for decision-making processes in association with redevelopment activities.
Which could even allow for more of those green space areas to say, mm-hmm. wow, you want to do this development here, but this is a part that really doesn't have any parks. So yeah. if you want to do that development, we're going to require you to add a green space to it.
Yeah. So yeah. Remember, we only come up short on the park side of it because we can't include the beach.
Right. Yeah.
Otherwise, right. we're way over the top and yeah. you know probably exceed just about every other jurisdiction's amount yeah. of park space.
Or the strand or the harbor.
Yeah, yeah, we can't include any of those things. And yeah, so, you know, so.
Yeah, we do have good, I mean, that's why a lot of us live here is because
and
of that. Yeah.
Another thing I'd want us to consider when we look at the parking element, maybe, is something called safe parking, which has to do with identifying spaces for folks who are living in their vehicles, having safe places to park. And there are usually requirements with those that people are substance-free and, you know, they kind of police themselves, but it was an interesting concept to look and see if there's any spaces in our city where we could consider safe parking.
So I think we could do that through the housing element.
It will. I mean, also, I mean, the you know, state laws change. We can't make people move anymore or do any of those things. They're yeah. allowed to park wherever they want to park. I mean, mm. yeah. I mean, we don't have much of an issue as it relates to, you know, the ability for people to park in places and be okay. I mean, it's a pretty safe city. Mm-hmm. So, but I mean, yeah, we could certainly.
It's more like I have clients in my shop on occasion who are living out of their vehicles, and really pretty responsible people.
Mm-hmm.
And but find that they may park in a neighborhood and kind of keep an eye on things. But sometimes people in the neighborhood are like, "What are you doing here?" And you know, harass them to some level. Yeah. So I don't know whether.
Well,
that's
there is a ordinance that you can't. Sleep in your vehicle overnight, right?
The state law changed on that, and so we can't. Yeah.
Okay. Oh.
But I think what Susan's talking about it's a level of hospitality and humaneness that goes from the people that are wealthy. You know, the state requires us to take care of the visitors at low incomes, but you know, this is an issue that's becoming more. More obvious. I mean, mm-hmm. even at Cal Poly, I think they estimate we've got 80 students living in cars.
Yeah.
And that's not an insignificant number. And it's not always because, well, some do it because they don't want to take loans and things like that. You know, so we've got this community here where some people are a paycheck away from being living in their car. And we have to acknowledge that. It doesn't mm-hmm. mean they're bad people. It just means no. that they live in their car for now.
Yeah. Yeah.
We have to be aware of that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Scott, does this body have anything more to do about the cannabis retail business here in Morro Bay? Is that we're not going to?
I'm sorry. About what?
About marijuana being sold, recreational marijuana stores and.
So yeah, I mean, I can at least give you. It's a fair question. So where are we at? We're in the process of vetting the applications that we have. We have seven. Six of them made it through the first phase, and we're getting ready to embark on the second phase, which is the review by the Cannabis Committee, which is made up of three of the department heads, police chief, fire chief, and our finance director. I'm sure much to their chagrin, because the amount of information they have to review is significant. And so we'll be setting up that process. It'll probably involve interviews with the different applicants and those types of things. But there's not a permitting process that's required beyond the licensing. Mm-hmm. The licensing is a pretty substantial process they're going to have to go through. And the requirements that are associated with it are pretty stringent, including all of the security that goes along with it and those types of things, yeah.
What about the land use approval? Is there a specific? Is there a place they're gonna go, or
they're identified? Well, yeah, we have some limitations to where they can be placed depending on.
No, but I mean, is there like an address? Like it's gonna be at 102.
The area that's defined is a little portion of a portion of Quintana, a portion of Morrobay Boulevard, a portion of Main Street, and then there's a small area of North Main at the southern end of it where they're allowed. Once you get further further up Main Street, you get too close to the high school. The buffer extends across the highway.
They're going to find it.
The only reason I was asking is I wondered if there was a hard date. I'm wondering if I would not like this amounts to a sizable boost to the economy. I'd like to make sure that Morro Bay rather than some other local community mm-hmm. ends up with one of them.
Yeah, no, we allow two. Out of the six applications that made it through to the second phase, there's some pretty qualified operators there that operate elsewhere. Mm-hmm. We'll see where it is. I'm not the decision maker. I'm the one that has to hold this thing through the process and then do the licensing of it. But we needed to have separation because we're handling it all at staff level. The city council, there's no appeal process. It'll live with the city manager when we're done. So the cannabis committee will make the recommendation to the city manager, and the city manager will do whatever the city manager does.
So city council doesn't vote?
Nope.
Good.
It's to remove the political component of it, right? Which is the issue right now you're hearing about some of the other our local jurisdictions in the mm-hmm. five cities area. So we won't have that issue. I mean, you know, I'm on the council side of things anyway.
Okay, so I think we just got through unfinished business.
Oh.
And then planning commissioners' comments and future agenda items. So any more comments? Okay. Community development director's comments.
I don't have anything, and I'll forewarn you, we might not have items for the next planning commission meeting. We had an appeal, but that appeal has moved forward to the first meeting in April. And so I'll be touching base tomorrow with Willow to see if she had anything else that was actually ready to go. If not, then we might not have the meeting. Just kind of giving you a heads up that you might get another break.
Okay, we're going to send our checks back.
What check?
Okay, at this point, unless we have other comments, then we'll adjourn to a date uncertain.
Supposedly to the next meeting, but
yeah,
we'll see.
Okay, thank you, everybody.